You're listening to Yumcha, a news podcast from Hong Kong Free Press, with me, Mercedes Hutton. This week, Happy Hong Kong? With Carol Liang. In this week's episode, I'm joined by Carol Liang, the Deputy CEO of mental health charity MindHK. Carol has been with Mind since it began in 2017, and over the years has worked tirelessly to change attitudes towards mental health in Hong Kong. We discussed why greater mental health awareness in the city has not resulted in reduced stigma, why so many people in Hong Kong experience mental health conditions in isolation, and why normalising talking about mental health is essential. I'm here with Carol Liang from Mind Hong Kong.
Thank you for having me here today.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for coming. So I wonder if you could start off by kind of telling us a little bit about what Mind does and how you came to work for Mind.
Yeah, absolutely. So Mind is a local mental health charity, Section 88 registered here in Hong Kong. And our vision is to ensure that no one in Hong Kong has to face the mental health problem alone. So it's quite broad, general vision, and, you know, very large scale. Our target audience is to those aged 12 to 65 in Hong Kong.
Okay.
So again, very broad.
Huge.
But there are a few ways in which that we, you know, try to achieve this vision. One is we really look to raise awareness. So we do this through training people in mental health literacy. So we have programs like Mental Health First Aid, Mental Health 101 that people can participate in to learn about what is mental health? What are the symptoms? Where can we get help? And I think those trainings have been really helpful in just improving mental health literacy generally in Hong Kong. We can go into that more later. The second is we do a lot of outreach work. So through our campaigns, our website, social media, we're really looking to, again, raise awareness of mental health in the community, but also reduce the stigma. We really want to share stories of individuals who have had mental health journeys, who are in recovery, to, you know, ignite hope in others as well. So we do quite a lot of campaigns. And lastly, we do some service provision, which means we train well-being practitioners. This is a large project of ours called IACT. It's a new type of paraprofessional in Hong Kong, and then they provide free mental health services to the community, both youth and adults.
And so how did you come to to work with this organization?
Honestly, it was quite serendipitous. I came back to Hong Kong about 6 years ago. I'm from here, but I moved back to Hong Kong after school. And
from
From New York.
And
someone I knew was heading up the charity or starting it up here and asked if I wanted to volunteer. I had a background in public health at the time, so seemed relevant. I also did have an interest in mental health. So I volunteered for a while. And of course, I think with Mind, there was such a big demand in society that it just grew and it became a formal organization quite quickly. And there was a lot of different tasks involved. And so I got asked to stay on as a staff member. And that's how it started. But it was all quite serendipitous, very lucky. And I've been there ever since. So I've been there since day one.
So it's been around for 6 odd years.
Yes.
And in your time there, how has Hong Kong's attitude towards mental health, I guess that's a huge thing. I'm asking you to speak for a whole city. But has the attitude changed?
Anecdotally, I say it has. I see a lot more workplaces, you know, covering mental health as a topic of concern. They're doing a lot more to implement mental health services or mental health awareness campaigns within their organizations. So seeing that in the corporate world, I think is very promising. I mean, we were also just discussing, you know, the government policy address yesterday. And I think the government has also been paying quite a lot more attention to mental health. And also another thing was COVID. I mean, globally, not only in Hong Kong, that really brought mental health to, as a topic of concern.
I actually wanted to ask you that. COVID obviously had a, I mean, generally probably had a negative impact on most people's mental health. But at the same time, it brought it to the fore and it became more of a conversation. So
yeah, it's tricky. I mean, it definitely impacted people's mental health. And it, in a way, it helped normalize the conversation a bit, because in somewhere like Hong Kong, you know, mental health isn't something you regularly talk about. At least 6 years ago, it wasn't. But with COVID, you know, everyone was experiencing the same problem. And so they felt like, okay, we have this external factor that we all understand. we can talk about how it impacts our mental health because it's more comfortable to talk about that everyone else can relate to. Mm-hmm. So I found that you know, a lot more people felt more comfortable speaking about
it. Yeah, yeah.
So that was a trend that I found. But interestingly, we do research quite often on stigma in Hong Kong. Mm. And what we found from our recent research in June is that there's been a huge increase in interest in mental health. A lot of people have been looking up resources on mental health conditions, mental health. And we saw that in our website. There was a huge spike once COVID started. It was like double the number of users. But the interesting part was that stigma didn't really improve. You know, anecdotally, I would have said, yes, it's mm-hmm. improved because people are more open about it. But through the research, it showed no, it actually worsened.
Oh, no.
Got worse. And I think part of the reason, and, you know, this is just a theory, I think there needs to be a lot more research done into this, is that COVID as a disease actually made people a little bit more, I guess they tended to stigmatize illness a bit more. Because COVID in itself actually was quite stigmatizing at one point in Hong Kong.
Certainly.
It's like you put yourself in that position, you got the illness, which of course is not the
fact.
And I will
keep my distance from you.
Yes. But there was that negative connotation kind of related to it. And I think that actually translated into other disease as well, where people kept to isolation when they were experiencing any sort of illness, be it a mental health problem or physical health problem. Mm. And we've seen this in Chinese culture previously where people tend to hide their illnesses as well. So it is really interesting. The studies that we have done, I need to look into it further because I do feel like in some way it has been a lot more normalized. But the impact of people actually having those better attitudes towards mental health conditions, it's not there.
No, that's a shame. I guess that's why Charity Service Mind exists, so that they can have to do the work. And I suppose mental health literacy you mentioned earlier, is that one of the ways that you try and combat stigma?
I think, you know, at first I would have said, yes, mental health literacy is a core component of reducing stigma. But as we see from our research, actually improved education doesn't mean reduce stigma. They're both important.
Yeah.
But I think literacy is important for other, you know, in improving other areas. For example, mental health literacy can be really important in maybe helping people identify areas of concern or knowing where to seek help or just simply being more aware of your own symptoms. But it doesn't really reduce stigma, which is really interesting.
Mm. So how do you do that?
Yeah.
It's probably not
question.
That easy.
Yeah. So we have an anti-stigma team in Hong Kong.
Yeah.
At Mind Hong Kong, which I lead, which we're really grateful to have. And I think it's quite unique to our work. But we've been looking at various studies, talking to experts around the world. And one of the best ways to reduce stigma is to use storytelling, actually, to use the human aspect, to have those personal narratives involved and show stories of hope and recovery. So we luckily have 100 or over 100 ambassadors at Mind that we've trained to share their mental health story. Mm-hmm. And so what we do is we use our campaigns, we use events to help them, provide them with a platform to share their own stories. And through our evaluations, it's been found to be very effective in changing attitudes.
Yeah. And so these are all people who have kind of overcome or survived mental health issues.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So all of them have had a mental health problem and are now in recovery.
And in terms of, I mean, Hong Kong specifically, we had this awful tragic event in June where these two women were stabbed and died.
Yes.
And immediately, I have to say, the media, obviously I'm part of it, didn't react that responsibly, I don't think. And, you know, there was kind of push notifications from several outlets about how, you know, all of this misinformation, including, and I'm not sure whether it was ever, in fact, verified that the suspect was thought to have been diagnosed with schizophrenia. And I think there was a lot of like knee-jerk like reaction to this. And suddenly mental health became a real buzzword. But I don't know if people were reacting in the right way exactly. Do you have any input?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really good question. And you're right, it does have quite a big impact in the way that people perceive mental health. In one way, I mean, in some sense, that it was positive in that it created an urgency to do something about the like structural changes that needed to be made to ensure that there is mental health care. So on that, you know, that side, it did have some positive effect. On the other, I think there is there's a lot of concern about how we talk about mental health in the media, but also beyond. I remember that, like, when that happened over the weekend, I immediately had to write a response. Not everyone with a mental health condition will be violent. That is the main message that I wanted to get across, that actually, you know, majority of people with a mental health problem are not violent at all. They're more likely to be the ones who receive violence or on the other end of it. And I think the problem actually is a lot around language.
Yeah.
And I don't actually blame the media so much. I think I really enjoy working the media on how they cover mental health, because it's complicated.
It is. It certainly
is. It's complex. Yeah. And I think growing up in Hong Kong, I realized, you know, working with the local media, I never received any education on mental health.
Right.
And I'm assuming most people didn't.
No.
So it is complicated to cover. But one of the issues that I found is that when people cover mental health, mental illness, they just group it as one.
Mm.
You know, right? When someone has schizophrenia, when someone has anxiety, when someone has depression, they're very different mental health conditions.
Mm-hmm.
When you read the media, it tends to be like, oh, you know, someone with mental illness committed this violent act, which then stereotypes or then stigmatizes the entire spectrum of mental health conditions, which is so broad.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is the area of concern that I really want to work on, is to not link mental health, mental illness generally to violence, because there is not a link. And also it really just reinforces those negative connotations that are related to mental health, which are driving attitudes towards it. So I think the media, I mean, I love Hong Kong Free Press's coverage on mental health. I think you've done a really good job in sharing resources in Hong Kong. But the media has such an important role to play in also sharing those stories, those resources.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, there's dangers in it, but there are a lot of positives that can come out of it as well.
You mentioned that you went to school in the US, but you're from Hong Kong.
Yes.
So you've kind of had you've got two different perspectives here.
Absolutely, yeah.
So is there a different attitude towards speaking about mental health in Hong Kong?
I mean, it's so nuanced, right? Like, it really depends. I think generally, yes, but that's also very general. It's not, it doesn't apply to everybody, right? It depends, like, which school you went to, which company you work for, of course. But if I say generally, looking at New York, everybody talked about mental health. Which is really interesting. Like, you know, New York City, everyone has a therapist. And, you know, there's that stereotype. But it's quite true. You know, majority of my friends who were there had a therapist. And it was so normalized. People spoke about it all the time. It was covered through our college insurance. So people could access it for free. There were so many, like, progressive campaigns and interventions and celebrities speaking about it. You know, you've got the Selena Gomez and Michael Phelps, very outspoken about mental health conditions like depression and anxiety. And it was just a very common topic. It is still stigmatized, though. I think that I wouldn't say it's not. But in Hong Kong, what I found is that people really hide it. Our research found that about 60-62% of people who have a diagnosable mental health condition don't disclose it to anybody. So not their husband, their wife, their partner, their friend, their colleague.
Goodness.
You can imagine.
Yeah.
That there are 1 in 6 people who currently have a mental health condition in Hong Kong.
And so does that mean they equally don't seek help for it?
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. So once they get the diagnosis, it's just there and they're in isolation with it.
Yeah.
So only about 30% get help, professional help, in Hong Kong for those who do have a diagnosable mental health condition. But you can see that people really do experience this in isolation. And I think that's a big problem, is that people are not accessing help because of the stigma and how strong it is here.
Yeah.
Growing up here and coming from, you know, I'm half Chinese, half European, but coming, you know, seeing the Chinese side of my family and also growing up in Hong Kong, you just see how much it's just really not accepted or how stigmatized it is. I think it's improved a bit, but then, you know, just looking at it from a collectivist society perspective, is that, you know, collectivist society, like in Chinese culture, you're really looking at like social harmony, right? So the problem here is that any type of illness, especially a mental health condition, is very much linked to your ancestry and to the idea of face. And Hong Kong is very face-driven, right? In all aspects. Everyone cares about their looks, other people's perceptions of them. And I think that's partially why it is such a hidden illness and why people don't seek help or tend to even address it when they do experience symptoms.
And do you think that there's also a, if people acknowledge or if they recognize that they're feeling a certain way, they don't know where to go?
Yes. It's a huge problem. Mm. And I think that that needs to be clearer about what is the first step.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because in the UK, say you generally have a family doctor or GP. Mm-hmm. You just have that one doctor that kind of takes care of you generally, then refers you out when you need.
Yeah, yeah.
Hong Kong is not as common, which means that first step, it's complicated. So actually what we found is that a lot of people, when they do start experiencing symptoms of a mental health condition, some go to a GP because in Hong Kong, people tend to experience more somatic symptoms, so more physical symptoms.
Right.
So they don't even consider it as a mental health condition. They go in saying, you know, like, oh, I have fatigue. I have digestive issues. I have a headache. And then, you know, then after it gets linked to a mental health condition. But a lot of other people, they tend to go straight to a psychiatrist.
Yeah.
When there are other opportunities available. Mm-hmm. But I think that generally is something we're looking to change as well.
Right.
Like sometimes you do need to go see a psychiatrist, but not everyone needs to go see a psychiatrist. Mm-hmm. Those are for more severe cases. But that seems to be the first step that Hong Kong people tend to go to.
A psychiatrist, those who can prescribe you drugs. You
can prescribe drugs.
Right. Yes. Whereas psychologists cannot. Do not. They deal with more behavioral therapies.
Yeah. But they can diagnose as well.
Okay, okay.
It is really interesting. Mm. There are huge waiting lines for psychiatrists in Hong Kong, especially if you're a non-urgent case. Mm-hmm. You're waiting up to 95 weeks.
Which is...
Yeah.
I mean, I can't even figure out how many months that is. And my math is bad, but it's ages. It's far too long.
So I think what we need is just a clear roadmap of what to do when I have certain symptoms or level of mild, moderate, severe, and where should I go seek help?
Yeah.
What's the first step?
Do people come to mind asking this question?
Yeah, sometimes. So with our IACT program that I was telling you about, we train well-being practitioners. And really, they're there to provide support to individuals experience mild to moderate mental health conditions, mostly anxiety and depression, because those are the most common.
Yeah.
And the idea by that is that we wanted to provide a layer within the system that could provide assessment and then either take them on to support them if they are mild to moderate and eligible. And if not, then refer them out to the right care manager or right service available. So that was the idea,
We reported in June also, this time it was something like psychiatrists in the public healthcare system have an average of 5 minutes per patient, which is...
Yes.
I can't even get my head around that. Like, how can they even begin to offer? I'm sure this is not their fault. How can they even begin to offer the level of care required?
Yeah. Well, there's such a high demand. They don't have time.
Yeah, right.
It's really difficult. Mm-hmm. I mean, the first appointment, I think, is 10 minutes on average. And the second is about, 2 to 6?
Yeah, right.
Around 5. Mm. And I think it's really hard for them as well.
Of course,
how do they keep track of so many patients, fully understand that... If this person is coming in for a diagnosis, fully understand the patient and the symptoms they're experiencing, but it's difficult.
Yeah. And in terms of private mental health care in Hong Kong, obviously that is there, but it's prohibitively expensive for many people.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's another barrier to care is just the cost of it, right? Mm-hmm. If you're looking at a psychologist, $2,005 an hour?
Yeah.
And that's not even just a one-off. You have to go regularly too. Mm-hmm. So that is a concern. Psychiatrist, he has up to $3,000 an hour now. Counselors, $1,000 as well. So there are a few more affordable options, I would say, luckily. But generally, private's very expensive.
Yeah.
And I think the problem also here is that insurance doesn't really cover.
No.
I mean, it does for a psychiatrist. And maybe that's why people tend to go to a psychiatrist get a diagnosis and then get the services because most insurance companies cover that.
Right.
But for psychologists and counselors, not so much. So that also is a huge barrier to care.
You mentioned earlier that most patients in Hong Kong present with or go to their doctor with physical symptoms and are later diagnosed with a mental health condition. Why do you think that is? Do you think that that's because they're not recognizing kind of the stressors, like the emotional stressors?
Maybe. I think it comes down to, the maybe lack of mental health literacy in Hong Kong or misunderstandings around it. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have that understanding or literacy, you're maybe less able to identify the emotions or symptoms that you might be experiencing, the mental health symptoms, really.
Yeah.
But when it comes to physical health symptoms, it's much easier to identify. It's about, this is wrong. I feel sick. Well, then if you're feeling really anxious, this is normal.
Yeah, yeah, right.
So I think in that sense, that's partially why it's playing out like that.
And I just wondered if we can quickly look through the policy address. Yes. Yesterday, John Lee delivered his second mm-hmm. policy address. Mm-hmm. Last year, I actually did go through the past 5 years, and in 2 years, mental health was not mentioned. Mm. Last year, John Lee said mental health is one of the keys to happiness, but then didn't really say anything else. And in 2020, there was an acknowledgement that the social unrest and COVID had impacts on people's well-being.
Yeah.
But that was about it. And then there was an injection of money into a drugs fund.
Mm-hmm.
So mental health, I think it's fair to say it's not been a core concern of our government mm-hmm. in recent years.
Mm-hmm.
Yesterday, perhaps in light of recent events that we've mentioned, there was several paragraphs dedicated to it, which is, if we're speaking in time spoken about alone, you know, an improvement. But as I understand, very little of what was said was new. I think it was existing.
Yeah. So, I mean, a lot of what was mentioned yesterday was from the Mental Health Advisory Committee's recommendations. So the Mental Health Advisory Committee was set up in about 2017. So mm-hmm. same time as Mind Hong Kong, around the same time. And they've been working, basically it's a committee of different stakeholders within the mental health sector, different experts.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been working to come up with different recommendations mm-hmm. that the government should take on in order to improve mental health in Hong Kong and mental health services. So some of these were from those recommendations,
mm-hmm.
and I think it's promising to see that one was really covered in the policy address.
Yeah. There
were several points made, and it was shown to be, you know, an area that they do want to work towards improving. But yeah, it is good to see that those measures that were recommended by the advisory committee are being considered and will be implemented as well.
Yeah. And one of them is a mental health literacy resource kit, which I don't know entirely what that means, but it's for school students.
Yeah, and I think that makes a lot of sense mm-hmm. as well. We've seen that one of the main areas of concern in Hong Kong is the mental health of not only the elderly as a very vulnerable group, but also the youth.
Yeah, right.
You have youth suicide rates that are rising.
Mm-hmm.
Young people had a really difficult time during COVID. They're probably the most impacted.
Yeah, right.
So I think it's right that there needs to be better mental health literacy within schools. You know, mm-hmm. like I was saying earlier, I grew up here and never learned about mental health until I went to graduate school.
Yeah, yeah.
which, you know, was a norm back then. But now I think schools are a lot more attuned to the fact that it's really mm-hmm. beneficial for kids to learn about it. And not only kids, but parents and teachers.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So we need those around them to also really have that idea of mental health literacy to identify problems when they arise, but also to support people when they arise, whether it's their own kids or even those around them.
Yeah. I'm speaking anecdotally, but from a British perspective, where I grew up. But I think in the UK, at least, there's been a generational shift between how people approach mental health. Like, my parents wouldn't dream of discussing it. My generation and those like younger mm-hmm. are certainly much more open to it. Yeah. Do you think is that similar here, do you think?
I think so. I think generationally there are differences, definitely. Mm-hmm. The obviously generalization.
Yeah.
I do feel like young people are quite open to speaking about it mm-hmm. and actually seeking help. But it really varies between schools and the environments they're in and their parents as well.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So part of the problem in Hong Kong is that for a lot of young kids who want to seek support through counseling, even if you're a teenager, parent consent is required.
Okay.
So actually there is an issue of that being a barrier. One, because they may not want to tell their parent that they want to seek counseling. And two, because a parent may not want to consent for their kid to go to counseling.
Yeah, right.
Because there are, you know, so many stereotypes kind of linked to that.
Mm-hmm.
I think I was trained also as a counselor and worked in a school for a bit.
Okay.
I was quite surprised at how open young people were to coming and getting help and sharing about their emotions. It was just so different to how it was in my day.
Yeah, right.
It wasn't too long ago, but, you know, it was really, like, promising and hopeful for me to have a 13-year-old come into my room and say, like, I felt really highly anxious today before my exam. And like, these are the symptoms I experienced. What can I do next time to manage that? Like,
yeah.
That would have never happened 10 years ago.
No.
I really like don't think any of my friends would have done that. So I think there is a positive trend coming out.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And is it normal of most schools to have counselors, or is that an international school?
It is thing. Normal. So right now the government requires that each school has social workers at least. Okay. So some of the social workers do provide counseling, mm-hmm. but it is becoming a lot more normal for schools, local schools and international schools to have counselors on site.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
In terms of Hong Kong, which is arguably quite a stressful city.
Yes.
What can people do to take care of themselves, you know, to practice self-care and...
Yeah.
And, you know, maintain their mental health.
I mean, for me, whenever someone asks me about self-care, I say, like, do what works for you, mm-hmm, right? Because mm-hmm. it's so unique to every individual. What works for you will not be the same for me, probably, yeah. right? Mm-hmm. So I think try things out, see what works, but also consider the fact that Hong Kong is a notoriously very fast-paced city. As yeah. you said, it is stressful. People are always in a rush. They're quite impatient. Mm-hmm. we live in very dense areas. We live in noisy areas, very cramped areas that tend to maybe increase our stress levels. Mm-hmm. So for me, I find it really helpful to get outside in nature, go for a walk, go for a hike, even if it's just once a week on the weekend.
Yeah, yeah.
That can be really helpful just mm-hmm. to have that silence.
Yeah.
And to really be in nature, which has been found to be very beneficial yeah. to one's mental health. But also, you know, don't feel bad about taking time for yourself. Mm-hmm. I think that a lot of people in Hong Kong love to schedule things in advance and have a very full social calendar. Yeah. generally what I see, which, you know, being social is good too. Mm-hmm. It has its positives. But I think sometimes if you do feel a bit overwhelmed or quite stressed or a little bit anxious, it's okay to be like, you know, I want a time alone at home mm-hmm. just to read a book or watch Netflix. And that's okay as well. So
yeah,
do what works for you.
I wonder if we can talk about Mind's Honestly Speaking campaign.
Sure. Yeah, so the Honestly Speaking campaign, that was something that Mind Hong Kong did in August. Mm. So actually it was quite good timing given the incidences
yeah.
happening around then, around this media coverage of mm-hmm. violence and mental health. So the idea was that we wanted to share the stories of our Mind Hong Kong More Than a Label ambassadors. Mm-hmm. So this is a program that Mind Hong Kong has done in partnership with Mindset,
yeah.
which is Jardine's mental health charity.
Right.
And like I said earlier, you know, we train ambassadors to share their stories. And what we wanted to do is share a campaign, which was called Honestly Speaking Citywide, that shared stories of hope or quotes that really showed stories of recovery mm-hmm. and hope for people who have experienced a range of different mental health conditions. And we also did some side events where our ambassadors shared their personal stories and how they entered recovery as well. Mm-hmm. So it was really powerful and so great to see. You know, we had MTR ads,
I saw loads of them actually.
Yeah. yeah. We had, you know, it was obviously also on social media mm-hmm. and on our website where we shared all of our ambassadors' stories, which I think was really powerful. We did this because, you know, we saw that, like I said, stigma wasn't really improving that mm-hmm. much. And, you know, there were some concerning statistics, like, for example, 58% of people in our study said that they would stop being friends with someone if they had a mental health condition.
No.
And really? 38% said they would not be willing to work with someone.
And yet one in six people.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, part of that is obviously wow. like people have a misunderstanding about what it means to have a mental health condition. Yeah. It's very much seen as like being on the severe end of the spectrum.
Right.
But there is a lot of stigma around mm-hmm. it. And what we wanted to do is actually help those who are experiencing a mental health problem know that there is possibility for recovery as well.
Yeah, yeah.
And to also, for those who are not experiencing a mental health problem and may be unintentionally stigmatizing it, know that individuals with a mental health problem or who have had one have this whole identity that's mm. like far beyond just their diagnosis. And they are everyday people that we work with.
Yeah.
Or that we are friends with or mm-hmm. family members with anymore.
And everything that Mind HK does, is it bilingual?
Everything is bilingual, yeah. yes.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. is it affiliated with Mind in the UK?
So not formally, mm-hmm. But Mind in the UK is someone who have been very supportive of mm. our work. So actually how we started is with the help of Mind in the UK.
Oh, okay.
Hence, I guess, the name. So the way we started is that we realized the biggest gap, at least at the time, a few years ago, was that there was a lack of comprehensive mental health information in Hong Kong mm. available in Chinese.
Oh, okay.
Mind UK is known as notorious for having really high quality information on mental health. Mm. And we thought, you know, why not ask them for some help?
Okay, right.
So how we started is we localized some of their content and then translated it into Chinese and published it in Hong mm-hmm. Kong for the Hong Kong community. So that was, you know, the main partnership between us and Mind in the UK. It was really, they donated their resources right. really kindly.
Yeah.
But it's been so helpful. And I think, you know, we get so many we got thousands of website viewers a month, about 50,000. So it's been such a benefit, I think, to the Hong Kong community.
And at the time when Mind HK was established, were there other organizations trying to do the same thing or kind of in that space?
In Hong Kong, yeah. Yeah, I think there are. And increasingly, I think over the last 3-5 years, there have been a lot more. A lot of them maybe are a bit more niche and specialized.
Yeah.
You know, say they work on a specific mental health condition. Not so much about campaigns and awareness building.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, there it's been really promising to see a lot of different charities set up or initiatives set up locally working on this, because we know we can't do it alone.
No, and
for us, we'd rather see other people do it as well, because there's such a demand. Yeah.
You mentioned the Mental Health Advisory Committee.
Yes.
Is that what they were called?
Yes.
Do you have access to them, to any members? Are you able to kind of get in front of officials that matter?
Yeah. I mean, we know some of the members, and some of the members are also on our board advisory committee. Yeah.
If someone was worried or like feeling like they needed to seek help, where would you advise they went first off?
For themselves.
Yeah.
I think it really depends. If you have a GP and you trust that GP, go to your GP because they can always refer out to a specialist who they think may be appropriate. If you're really, you know, unsure, don't have a GP, experiencing some symptoms of a mental health condition, you can go see a psychologist or counselor who can refer out as needed as well. Yeah. And if it's very severe, like if you are experiencing a crisis or suicidal ideation, then I do think that you should seek emergency services.
And what if you were concerned about a friend of yours or a family member?
Yeah, I mean, it is difficult. People ask me this a lot.
Right, right.
And then I experience it with friends, and I'm like, yeah, it's not easy.
No.
It's not easy, but no. I think one of the skills that I really tell people to learn is active listening. I think it can be very beneficial, not just, you know, day-to-day conversations,
yeah.
like learning how to listen properly to a person, to validate their emotions, to make them feel like they're seen and heard.
Yeah.
Because that can actually be very beneficial to them in supporting them during that hard time. If you feel like they would be open to it and you're comfortable sharing about it, then I think maybe you can, you know, advise them or share them, like, oh, help is available. If you need me to go with you, I'm here to go with you. But it really depends on the person.
Do you think it's important to, within friend groups, normalize talking about mental health?
I think so. I think so, because, you know, we all have mental health, right? It's a spectrum that we all go up and down on the spectrum throughout our lives. It's just like our physical health, arguably, you know, there is no such thing as physical mental health. It's just health in some way. So I think it is really important to normalize it and have those conversations, because what can be detrimental to a person is when they suffer alone.
Yeah.
And that's what I found. And I think once you start talking about it, people are a lot more open to speaking about it. You know, a lot of people just come to me and share their life story and their mental health problems, because they're like, oh, Carol's in mental health. Though she must not be judgmental about this, which I assume is their thinking, right?
Yeah.
But the fact that I'm so open about it and will happily like share on social media about it and talk about this subject all the time means that people feel comfortable sharing to me about it.
Yeah.
And I'd say the majority of people in this world will experience some sort of mental health problem in their lifetime. So I think it is really important, and it opens up the platform for deeper discussion.
And I guess like you just said, like not to be to kind of accept without judgment what people say.
And you know, studies always show, especially among youth, the first person a person goes to when they are experiencing symptoms, if they don't want it to be a professional, they want it to be a peer. So friends are actually really important. And that's also another thing we want to do through Mind Hong Kong, through our training, is to teach people how to support friends and how to identify specific symptoms within other people, because we have a role. We all have a role to play.
That's it for this week's episode with Deputy CEO of Mind HK, Carol Liang. To find out more about the charity and its work, search for Mind HK online and on social media. You've been listening to Yum Cha, a news podcast from Hong Kong Free Press, written, produced, and edited by me, Mercedes Hutton. HKFP is a member of the Trust Project. Find out all about our journalistic standards by visiting hongkongfp.com/ethics. and for more informative and impartial coverage, and to learn how to support our journalist-led newsroom, visit hongkongfp.com.